Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio number 515. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, almost birthday boy?
Almost birthday boy? My birthday was yesterday.
Yeah, it's not your you're not actually the birthday boy because it was yesterday.
Oh, okay.
So you're almost.
That's right. Almost.
Yes.
Ah, ha, ha. Now I get it. I thought that you were like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah, not here. Yeah, I guess almost usually means it's approaching, doesn't it?
Yes. That's what threw me off. But no. Thank you very much, Kevin.
Well, you wanted to start off with the WWE topic, and I think that it's a fair question to ask. Do you think this week was the week that Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff got whatever? I can't even remember what the... I know that we decided on their titles last week, but I already can't remember. Executive Director?
Executive Directors, yes.
Okay.
And
do you think that kicked in this week, or do you think that there just happened... at least, well, really on both shows, that they decided to maybe feature some faces they hadn't been featuring.
Yeah, kind of, but no. This was definitely not a week of major change. This certainly wasn't a week of major change. I mean, Heyman has had influence for some time. From what's been written, Bischoff did not start this week. He's, I believe, still,
oh, okay,
you know, in the process of moving. I don't feel like at all that this wasn't any more than a business as usual week.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I feel like just because I was caught up for a majority of Raw. And for really most of SmackDown, it definitely seemed like people were enjoying this week's product a little bit more. Or am I misreading
Raw
this?
I thought Raw was absolutely awful. No. Raw was a terrible show.
Yeah, that's because I definitely do remember reading that people thought that, unless they were just being super sarcastic and I wasn't catching it, that people generally seem to like Raw, at least on the Twitters more.
That Raw was terrible. No, that Raw was torn apart. A lot of people stopped watching it. I don't know where you are. I'm glad I don't follow some of the accounts that the official Stunt Granny account is following.
Yeah, they definitely... It was... the start to Raw in general was pretty brutal.
I don't know. I mean, it was just the start to Raw with Heyman and Lesnar, I guess that was fine.
Yeah, the very beginning was fine, but there were three segments, because I was just scrolling back through my column. There are just some things about this whole no action during the break that it leads to really strange, these two out of three falls matches.
Yeah, I don't even know what the hell, what they were even, it's just bad, and it needs, there wasn't anything like that on SmackDown, because as we've noted, they do the act during the commercial break deal on SmackDown,
right.
But Raw definitely needs to just be completely torn down and rebuilt. I mean, the entire format and structure of the show, there's... Because it was not good, and you know, if not bad, before they started doing this, now it's just terrible. I mean, you cannot have a good show with this structure. You really cannot.
Well, yeah, it just doesn't make sense from a storytelling perspective in the ring. Like, there's no reason that Scott Dawson should have been pinned, like, seconds into a match.
No, no, there absolutely was not. And at some point, there in the second fall, there had to have been a miscommunication because... What was it?
Oh, was what, that supposed to be...
Scott Dawson just pinning one of the Usos with just a flapjack because apparently... Dash Wilder forgot to stay in the ring and hit the shatter machine.
Okay, I was just gonna ask if that was supposed to be a shatter machine.
I don't because that was really really weak, and I mean I guess they covered it as well as they could, but it was no bueno. And I guess if you're trying to, I guess there's really at this level there's no excuse for it. I mean, it's again, but you know, the talent's against the eight ball anyway.
And if that
was Ricochet? I mean, I get it. They wanted to somehow establish that Ricochet and the Usos are going to be friends, and Styles has already got Anderson and Gallows. You know, when they're going to have a 6-man tag in the coming weeks, and they didn't just want to do that match, but. I mean, but that's coming up with an idea with the end game in mind, but not having the detail work. Like, why was Ricochet in this match against the Revival and Bobby Roode? You know, and Roode was the real odd man out. They just pulled him out.
Yeah, they're like, oh no, you don't get to chase around the 24/7 title this week. You get some in-ring action. And, it would have made way more sense to have it be a 6-man match against the club, which in some ways it should have been, because it kind of ended up being that way anyway later in the show. Like, I don't know why they made the Revival and Roode, like, you know, some type of go-between for whatever reason. You know, yeah. There was not a whole lot good about this segment. You know, the less said about it, the better, probably, and we've already said a lot about this segment.
The only highlight was Ricochet selling the taking a bump and selling the phenomenal forearm.
Oh,
that was it.
Yeah, but even that one, it was like one of those ones where I'm like, ah, man, I know that AJ doesn't want to jump too soon and like hit the guy in the back, but it was one of those moments where Ricochet had to sit there and wait for Styles to jump into the ring, and it was just like, man, even Styles doesn't quite have the timing with him tonight. But yeah, the Ricochet bump afterwards was pretty bonkers, and made the phenomenal forearm look like a I mean, not that it isn't a thing of beauty, but it really let the gravity of that move sink in. So, and then we end up having, yeah, it was really weird too, like the end of the segment with, normally if a team loses and they don't have anything to do with the feud, they go away. So it was kind of interesting that the Revival and Roode kind of came back into the situation when the club hit the ring.
That was very, very, very weird. I didn't really understand that at all. It feels like, okay, I mean, I do not understand why they got involved, other than just to have the odds advantage with the heels. I mean, it feels like the Revival should be done with the Usos, and Bobby Roode, whatever they're calling him this week, has nothing to do with anybody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Honestly, the last we saw him was running around for the 24/7 title. That's all I remember really seeing him in. So, yeah, there was a whole lot not going well for that segment. And, yeah, that was just kind of the beginning. I guess I'm still weirded out by the Viking Raiders kind of got some real opponents, but now they're just getting, you know, enhancement talent. And
yeah,
it's not even like convincing enhancement and talent. Like they, yeah, there's a lot wrong with the WWE currently.
Yeah, and, there definitely is. Yes.
So it's going to be an interesting ride here for a while, I guess. And yeah, that you know, they just need to. I mean, I guess I was kind of hopeful that they seemed to be changing things a little bit as far as, and I do feel like there were at least some new faces on the programming this week. Like the fact that Cedric Alexander is a thing is good for me.
Yeah. I am going to be completely skeptical about this whole thing until we get through next week and he doesn't get destroyed by Drew McIntyre.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of see that coming.
Yeah, well, I'm still trying to, I mean, because all these people who have issues with Shane and, you know, there's a bunch of them right now, and I don't know if it's just going to be Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon in a singles match at SummerSlam, or if they're going to do a big tag match, something. It feels like something's coming to a head with all that, so maybe Cedric Alexander can hitch himself onto that if that's where we're going. But yeah, I'm going to be very, very skeptical and just cynical about it, you know, until I see that they are committed to pushing Cedric Alexander.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess I don't really expect a push out of him, but and I'm trying to think of, and I don't know, has Finn Balor been out for, and maybe I just keep on forgetting because I feel like I asked this question before, but has Finn Balor been out for injury or something recently? Like, I'm kind of hoping that him losing the Intercontinental title frees him up for bigger and better things. But
it sounds like after SummerSlam, he's taking some time off. I don't know if it's injuries. I don't know what it is.
Oh.
And it feels like they're going to feed the Demon's first loss to Bray Wyatt and his new Fiend gimmick.
Oh,
it feels like that's the direction we're headed in.
I mean, I'm okay with Finn Balor losing to Bray Wyatt, but the Demon is that one's still a little off limits to me.
Yeah, no, I would agree, but it just seems like that's, I mean, even though that was the feud at SummerSlam 2 years ago, I mean, everyone was going. I mean, the one thing on Raw that everyone was going gaga for was the return of Bray Wyatt in the Fiend mask, which has the potential to be something. I mean, I hope they do more with Mr. Rogers Bray and the puppets, because otherwise, what was the point of all of that?
Well, and that was the other thing that kind of, in some ways, hurt the debut, like. It's been at least two, and I think 3 weeks without a new Firefly Funhouse, and it kind of made me not worry about him popping up. And I don't know. I guess it's still kind of weird to me. Like, those segments, while I ended up getting on board with them, it didn't really, you know, if he's going to be a completely different character, like...
Here's something I'll say. He needed a new finishing move.
Oh.
I mean, he really did. Because this cannot be just be Bray Wyatt in a mask. You know, it doesn't have to be a completely new thing. I hope they incorporate elements of the Firefly Funhouse and into it, and you know, a split personality type of deal. Maybe even do a thing where sometimes it's not even. If you can find, there's plenty of guys with Bray's, you know, similar body type. Sometimes, you know what? Bray's at ringside and someone else is in the mask. Do something like that.
Oh. I guess that's the thing. Like, they could be doing a split personality thing, but they haven't really established that very well.
No, and that's something that would suck, is if nothing that they did actually in the Firefly Funhouse sketches was a tip or a clue or something in code for what was to come.
Yeah, I mean, they showed the flashes of him in the mask.
Yeah. Other than that, but the significance of each of the puppets and everything and all of his words and the writing on the and literally every piece of furniture or every prop and every prop they used. I really want to believe that they put a lot of thought into that and into what is going to happen when Bray starts wrestling again, and how it's all going to fit together.
And I mean, that has been the question for a while, and it does look like we'll get the answer to that. Like, and I guess maybe he was part of the infusion. Like, I mean, he isn't an infusion of new talent necessarily, but I mean, has he been gone the better part of a year at this juncture?
I don't believe he's wrestled on TV since maybe last summer. It's been a long time.
Yeah, so I mean, he's kind of new in a lot of ways, and obviously I'll still give it a little more time
I'm definitely giving it time, seeing where they go with it. Once again, you know what? For his sake, when he does start wrestling, I hope he's learned some new holds. He transitions maybe to a new finisher. Because this could you know, go real quick into, you know, just being, Malibu Stacy's new hat, you know, or hey, it's Bray Wyatt in a mask.
That is pretty important, because even when he kind of tried to change up the last incarnation of his gimmick, like, it did just kind of feel like more of the same thing. And they can't really afford to do that again. You know?
Right, no. No, they definitely can't. Hopefully this thing, because, you know, he's jumping into something, it looks like with Finn Balor, who just came off of losing two nights in a row, pretty decisively. I don't know exactly what's going on with Finn. If he's not happy with them, they're not happy with him, there's an injury issue or what, but it feels like, Finn is definitely, he is there to be fodder for a little while.
Oh, for sure. And it's, yeah, I mean, I guess I'm just kind of bummed about that being the situation, just because I remember kind of, that's when I hadn't been watching SmackDown, NXT that much, And I remember tuning in when, and it might have been right when he was champion, so it was probably getting close to the end of his run. But I remember liking him so much down there. And that's just been another one from NXT that, for whatever reason, hasn't fully translated. Like, I mean, it is kind of funny that the Intercontinental title went from him, who never kind of completely translated to the main roster, to Shinsuke Nakamura, who I guess they're trying to reestablish him, but they've still done a piss-poor job of that. So that's kind of another one where we get to wait and see if they're actually going to put some creative juice behind him moving forward.
Right.
So, yeah. And I'm trying to think of what else was going on there at the beginning of Raw. That, but I mean, we've kind of covered most of it so far.
Yeah.
Another thing that was not maybe outlived its comedy life, which seems to happen in the WWE, the wedding stuff.
Oh, no, no, no. You are so wrong about that.
Oh, you enjoyed that?
No. That was... That might have been the crescendo of this whole thing, but no. A man in his underwear being pinned on a hotel bed. Come on now.
Okie dokie. Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're into that kind of a thing, I guess maybe part of it is a little bit of jading, just knowing that it was coming.
Yeah, that's no. That is true. I mean, you knew truth was getting inside of that room, so yeah.
Yeah, I was expecting nothing less than what ended up happening. So that could have been part of my problem. I guess something that is kind of interesting, and we didn't talk about it last week at all, but I guess, what do you think of the WWE using the Street Profits as hype men?
I absolutely hate it. It's just... You know what? Okay. Let me choose my words here. They've just kind of come out of nowhere. I guess, you know, they have the NXT championships with them. They don't do anything. They're not wrestling on any of the main roster shows. Like, I've really gotten into them in NXT. I think that, you know, I like their act. I mean, it took me a little while, but I really got into them, you know. And, of course... In the ring, Montez Ford in particular is fantastic. But yeah, this is just this just isn't hitting with me. It's like the inverse. It's also just something about an inverse to me. It's in the ring, Montez Ford is you know, superior to
Angelo Dawkins.
Dawkins, yes, Angelo Dawkins. But in these segments, I feel like Dawkins comes off, you know, cool and hip, and I think that Montez Ford is just absolutely overacting to a ridiculous degree. I don't like it that way. I just don't like it. It's just not working for me at all. What do you think?
I like the more you talked about it, I at least side with you a little bit. I do think that, that Ford isn't coming off as well, in the segments as, Dawkins is. I do like the idea of having someone that can kind of have commentary about multiple segments. Like, it's something kind of weird, you know, that never seems to happen. Like, you don't really hear people talk about other people's feuds. Like, if they're feuding with that person, they might drag up something from the past. But there's not usually someone there kind of talking about it. And I find that part kind of interesting. You know, I'm not sure that that's gonna... that can stick or can be a long-lasting thing. And there is the problems that you also pointed out that... they keep on talking about wanting to smoke, but they are not getting any in-ring matches currently.
Nah, I mean, the whole thing is just very, very weird. They just won the NXT Tag Team Championships. You know, they went through this whole thing with the Viking Raiders / War Raiders. And you know, them being called up as NXT Tag Team Champions and then having to have them vacate the championships without losing them. To transition them fully to the main roster. And, of course, then stop really pushing them, which is weird. So yeah, it's a weird thing. I didn't expect to see them a couple of weeks ago, and it's still it just feels like it's something that just doesn't fit right now. It, you know, and the role that you're talking about, you know, I get your point, but I also guess don't see the purpose of it.
Oh,
I mean, I feel like that's supposed to be the announcer's jobs.
Oh, jeez. That's a topic that could, like, always be a topic of conversation. Because that was one that I was amused when Corey Graves is like, oh, don't worry about what I say to Renee. She's my best friend. I still don't understand how two best friends have so little chemistry. I just... I don't. Like, she's better than Byron Saxton, who just, you know, just doesn't even react when a personal insult is hurled his way. At least Renee Young knows enough to be insulted when this happens, or to fire back in some form or another. Whew, man. Just, yeah. The announcing is just not terribly good at the current moment. Like, it's kind of like the rest of the product. Like, it's just not terribly good. And, yeah. I just wait for someone to punch some kind of hole in Corey Graves' arguments, and no one seems to be able to do it.
Yeah, no. That gets very... Yeah, that gets very old. It gets very annoying. It's not enjoyable to listen to. I mean, yes, these people might all be best friends in real life, but it doesn't come off. It doesn't come off like they like each other, but it also doesn't come off like they dislike each other in a good way that involves a healthy banter back and forth, where no one is made to look stupid or weak. I don't know when announcers stop being able to do this. I don't know why, you know. I mean, it started with, you know, this kind of announcing. It doesn't date back that far. It really feels like it started with JBL, just steamrolling over everyone, and talking most of the time.
And right.
Corey Grace has gone to that school.
It doesn't make
for an enjoyable listen because you. You feel like these people really don't like each other, and they there's just no camaraderie. There's no one's having fun here.
Yeah, it's really strange. You know, because, like, even though Gorilla would always give Bobby Heenan, or Bobby Heenan would always give Gorilla a hard time, A, he had a response. And B, you know, it worked. And I mean, like you said, and I guess maybe that's the problem, is there just isn't any balance.
No, there
like,
isn't.
It's 70% Corey Graves and like 30% Michael Cole / Tom Phillips and Renee Young / Byron Saxton, depending upon which show it is.
Yeah. Maybe it's a little off. Maybe that's a little off, but it's at least
60-40. Well,
yeah, it could be 60-40. It might be 50-50 if you're sharing it with four other people. But
well.
But
oh, I guess I meant per show.
And each of them gets, you know, 10% or less, 10 to 15%. But it's not good, and it's just that it just sounds like a bunch of people who just don't like each other, don't like their jobs. it's not enjoyable to listen to. I mean, we're talking about, you know, the best people, with Gorilla and Bobby, Vince and Jesse, JR and the King, JR and King, there was the banner, there was the back and forth. I mean, you can get mad at the heel announcer, you could laugh with the heel announcer, The babyface announcer always had credibility. Of course, there was always only two of them out there during most of those years.
And I mean, I guess that's the thing that makes it even worse. Like, Tom Phillips and Michael Cole should, for the most part, stay out of these arguments. But A, Corey Graves always drags them into these arguments. And B, the other, you know, Renee Young / Byron Saxton are so inept at firing back at Graves that Phillips and Cole have to do it part-time. And it's just like, man, they're giving those two guys too much shit to do anyway. Like, why isn't the other Keller analyst doing this stuff? Like, I mean, I guess I do think a three-man booth can work, but
yeah, I guess.
The WWE just does not have the people capable of doing it, and they're not directing them the right way to make it that way at all.
No, the announcing, once again, it's one of the worst parts of the product, and it has been for a while. And once again, that's something that, once again, it's one of the things that's going to need to change. Over the next few months, and I hope it does, because this is not enjoyable to listen to in any way, shape, or form. I don't know how good Renee Young could be if they were being produced differently. I don't know. I mean, we've seen Michael Cole in certain situations where he's not being overproduced, where he's done well. We've seen,
right.
Same thing with Corey Graves, and I don't know if what Vince picked up over the years from both his own commentary experience and producing and directing with the other broadcast teams that he's had over the years, but apparently he's just come to this point where he just feels like they just need to yell at each other. Or one just needs to browbeat, one or two others. It's not enjoyable to listen to. There is no reason that Byron Saxton has not snapped on Corey Graves yet. After all these years, there is no reason. I mean, even before Corey Graves was moved up to, the main roster, he was also JBL's whipping boy. So it's like we've had about 4 or 5 years of Saxton on main roster commentary
being a whipping boy.
Yeah, the guy long should have snapped and either quit or I don't want to say it, but just completely gone off, by now.
Yeah,
but he just sits there and takes it. I mean, Renee's still new enough in the role, but and she at least gives Corey some sass back, but also she has her moments where, like, the gif that's been going around of when Corey said about, talked about, yeah, you know, he's given a lot of small packages in his day, and she just started laughing.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes when, and I know that Corey Graves has admitted to it, when you're just trying to make yourself laugh, sometimes you're just going to obviously catch your fellow announcers off, too.
But you know what? So. You know what? I would prefer moments like that to them yelling at each other and calling someone, you know, Gorilla never called Bobby an idiot, and Bobby Damage definitely never called Gorilla an idiot. Especially since it's coming from the heel, supposed to be the heel announcer, to the impartial or babyface announcer, or one of them. You know, it's just like, just call them an idiot, and then they just sit there and take it.
I guess I don't mind the idiot part. Like, I feel like they're trying to make, in some ways, make it more confrontational, like kind of an online confrontation. Like,
oh yeah, that's
people are.
That's the discourse we need. That's more the discourse we need in this world.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that we need it, but I feel like they're kind of taking a page from that.
No, I get what you're saying. I mean, it's just like,
again, the other person still usually has a line to fire back with. You know, they just don't sit there and look like an idiot. You know, they might make themselves seem like an idiot with what they're coming back with, but in general, at least they kind of stand up for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, there's a different conversational style of announcing, which is storytelling. That's what Vince has always preferred to. Play by play, calling moves by their proper names, you know, and in that respect, I actually do agree. I mean, I thought like Joey Styles and ECW, and you know, went way too overboard calling every move, and certain other announcers, yeah, you know, did that as well.
Oh,
but they've produced some incredible broadcasts. It's like they've never learned anything from them. It's like they feel like, as I said, just them just yelling at each other, and you know, it's not funny either. It's like they're just not enjoyable to listen to.
Yeah, it is not enjoyable. I will tell you a tandem of announcers that I am currently enjoying. Maybe you feel a different way, maybe you don't. Rocky Romero and Kevin Kelly.
I'm not a big Romero fan. I like Kevin Kelly. I understand why Don Callis can't be on every show. Actually, at this point, they should just stop using Don Callis. I mean, it's just on the big shows at all. Maybe the announce crew should just then be Kelly and Romero, because it's just it needs consistency. So yeah, while I'm not the biggest Romero fan, I see why you would like them. I definitely like Kelly, but yeah, no, I think going forward that just needs to be the announced team. So I will agree with you on that.
Consistent announcing is definitely something of a problem in general, it would seem like to me, currently, because it drives me bonkers, still watching Ring of Honor, that they cycle in the same people, but one week Ian Riccaboni has what's his name? Colt Cabana, whom I like him with, and then not so much with Caprice Coleman, And I'm trying to think of the other guy that gets cycled in there. And I'm forgetting his name right now.
I don't remember.
But it's in...
I'm kind of done with ROH until they get rid of Bully Ray and the Allure. So I haven't been watching ROH. But I will say this. Colt Cabana needs to get his wrestling out of his system on his indie dates. He does not need to wrestle in Ring of Honor anymore. He should just be the commentator so they don't have that situation.
The problem is that, and this has just been cracking me up on Ring of Honor, to be honest with you, is that they're like, oh, this is a New Japan match, this is an NWA match, and I'm like, are you even Ring of Honor at all at this point?
Might as well not be, because everything that's just... Because everything that's stamped Ring of Honor turns to crap, apparently, so...
You know, it's because I guess kind of to what made me think about it was Colt Cabana is the national champion, I believe, for the NWA, and he defended the belt on Ring of Honor TV against James Storm maybe a couple weeks ago.
Didn't he lose that match?
And the
title?
I don't think so.
No, I'm pretty sure James Storm is the champion now.
Oh, well.
I might have just spoiled something for you coming up on TV.
It's possible that it's a spoiler. I guess I don't really care, because I don't remember Storm winning that night. I feel like Cabana retained. But, you know...
No, I mean, match happened in June.
Oh, well then, yeah, that must have been the match that I watched, and that's how little attention I was paying to it.
Oh, wait. The end of June, so maybe they haven't aired the match on TV yet. Well, the match is on, it's already available. It's available on the NWA's YouTube channel.
Okie dokie. Well, but anyway... You should not have someone else's superstars on there that frequently.
No, you definitely should not. And yeah, I'm not even sure what. Once again, I said that I'm not sure what Ring of Honor is even supposed to be anymore. They're helping the NWA produce shows. They're doing stuff with New Japan, CMLL in Mexico, and it's just
oh right.
There's no. I mean, the talent that are exclusive of Ring of Honor at this point, it's hard to tell what's what anymore, and it doesn't feel... I don't know what Ring of Honor is going to do, because it feels like even more of their talent's going to end up in AEW, which might not be good for AEW. Just turn itself into Ring of Honor.
Oh.
With the bigger budget.
No, that's not really the best plan, in my opinion.
I mean, you can't take everybody. I understand trying to want to take care of your friends, but there's already enough of that in AEW. There already feels like there's enough cronyism going on in AEW.
And that was one, I guess we could kind of talk about it in general, since we didn't want to talk much WWE. What did you get to? I mean, did you get to Fight for the Fallen at all this weekend?
Yes, I did get to Fight for the Fallen. I mean, overall, I thought it was okay. It didn't rock my world or anything. I thought the main event tag match was way too long. So they lost me with that one, trying to do a combination Young Bucks match, but also a Rhodes style match, a slower Rhodes Brothers style match, and there wasn't a clear heel or babyface in the match. So that match really didn't hit with me. I liked, probably I would say that I guess I liked Omega versus Shima the best. Out of everything on that show.
Gotcha. Yeah, that was one that I tried to watch it on Bleacher Report Live. It was not pulling up for me last evening. So since I had B-Block taped on Access TV, I decided to watch that instead. So, I only got maybe about halfway through the Evolve show.
The Evolve show is where having all that wrestling in it in a short period of time just kind of hit me. I mean, I try to get through it, but it's just like, I don't know who any of these guys are. I don't really want to introduce a new wrestling promotion into my life. I mean, maybe if they're more consistently on WWE Network. I pretty much knew, Adam Cole's not losing the NXT Championship to Akira Tozawa on an Evolve show.
What? Yeah, that was definitely something that they I felt like they were at least trying to get you into the characters.
They were trying. I mean, if anything, my favorite the favorite thing I saw on the Evolve show was the hardcore women's match. I enjoyed that a lot. I share your affection for Shotzi.
Oh, I didn't realize that was a hardcore match.
Or a no disqualification or whatever you want to call it.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, she, and I'm trying to think of what Shotzi's last name was, and it's escaping me currently. But she was pretty enjoyable, because I'm trying to think if that's the last thing I ended up seeing. Because
Shotzi Blackheart.
Oh, okay. Because I did not see the stuff that involved the WWE talent directly. I did not see the Tozawa and Cole match. Who else was supposed to be on there?
That was pretty much it. Those two, really.
Oh, I felt like there was a second matchup that had someone NXT related in it.
Well, I mean, did you mention Adam? Did you mention Matt Riddle and Drew Gulak?
No.
Yeah, that was the other match. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I did not see either of those matchups. So, I didn't even honestly like. By the time I tuned into Extreme Rules there, it was 8 o'clock, so I missed Undertaker, Roman Reigns taking on Shane and Drew. But I mean, throughout the night, yeah. I definitely got enough fill in on that to not really worry about it.
Well, no, you know what? My Extreme Rules viewing experience ended up a little weird. I started with the opening tag match with The Undertaker. Thought it was a really good match. Thought Undertaker had his best performance in years in that match. Really well laid out match. I mean, I left away also thinking, I hope they have something really good for all these guys at SummerSlam, because this match feels like something that really should have happened there. So that was good, but then my friends called me to go out for a little while, so I was gone for the next 2 hours and came back and was a little buzzed, so I was able to kind of get, okay, so I came home about 10 o'clock, the Samoa Joe Kofi match was about half over.
Oh, okay.
Enjoy what I saw of that.
Yeah,
and then,
good match.
And then watch the main event. So it's not like I watched 3.5 straight hours of wrestling before I had to watch a Baron Corbin match in the main event. So I probably enjoyed that better than what I would have enjoyed it. And then I went, you know, I kind of skimmed through the on-demand. So the way I ended up watching Extreme Rules, I would say I enjoyed the show.
Yeah, it was, most of the pay-per-views are not a bother. And I think we've kind of talked about that previously. The pay-per-views for the WWE are not a bother. Like, if I didn't type out a column every week on Raw and do this podcast, it might be easy to just tune into the pay-per-views and leave it at that. Because you'd still kind of get some of it without missing out on a lot of the bad stuff. But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the pay-per-view for the most part. Like, I guess I don't really remember the order of things. I really enjoyed the ending, which is, I guess, something that we can get to.
Yes.
Which is, you know, Brock Lesnar yet again being the Universal Champion.
Yeah.
Good, bad, indifferent.
We'll see right now. Because, you know, when they did it, and then, you know, fast forward into Raw, when they announced there was going to be the Battle Royal, and, you know, you start running the scenarios through your head of who else they could put against Braun, and then Seth just wins the Battle Royal. And it's Brock versus Seth again. It's just like, that's, it becomes a little disappointing. It's like, we've seen it. It's the trouble with them doing away with the guaranteed rematch clause, but still wanting to do rematches.
Yeah, because I'm not sure that I had noticed that happening that much after, you know, since they've started it. But for whatever reason, that Battle Royal really put it into perspective for me that they were pretty much granting rematches still. It's just that, you know, again, they're using creative energy in a place where they don't really need it.
No. There was no, even if without a, there was no neat reason for it. There not to be a challenge and an acceptance of a challenge, and you know we can do start really doing some angles, you know, for this match. I don't know. Once again, you never really know when Brock is going to be on the show or not. I mean, obviously next week they're going to be doing a big nostalgia show. I don't know if they're going to do any big angles there, but I feel like this is a match that's going to need. We'll get into some other stuff maybe before we head out, but it doesn't feel like a big match right now. It didn't even mean it at WrestleMania. It was the opener. And now it's going to be the big match on SummerSlam. It feels like this match is going to need some really great promo work, and not just from Paul Heyman. Seth Rollins is going to have to step up to the plate, you know, promo-wise. Maybe more than he ever has before. For this to feel like, you know, something special, you know, SummerSlam worthy.
Yeah, Rollins just really, almost the entirety of his run as a babyface has been kind of weird. And it seemed like he was getting people behind him finally when he went up against Lesnar the first time, but man, if people thought that Becky Lynch lost momentum after becoming Becky Two Belts, I don't know what you call what happened to Seth Rollins. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I mean, the combination of a three pay-per-view feud with Baron Corbin and the going with the real life relationship with Becky Lynch. Yeah. The two of them being so sugary sweet and everything, yeah, it didn't work. I mean, Becky has definitely been hurt by it, and Seth has probably been more hurt by it. And yeah, Seth is one of the best in in-ring performers in WWE, maybe arguably in the argument for being the best. But his promos are definitely, I would say, not even top 10.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising, like, because I guess I don't feel like they put, you know, I felt like they kept on putting Roman Reigns in a bad spot, you know, and they just gave him some kind of terrible material to work with. And I guess I haven't felt quite that same way with the material that Seth Rollins has been given. I'm not sure that it's good, necessarily.
No. It's not good, and his delivery of it is not good at all, either. I don't really feel like Seth has ever really stepped to the plate as a promo guy. I mean, he was probably at his hottest last year, you know, around this time. If anything, trying to put the Shield back together again hurt him, and, you know, hurt him momentum wise, because he was really doing some good stuff, you know, singles with the Intercontinental title last year, and then came the Shield reunion and the Ambrose feud. You know, he won the Rumble. You know, went through. They didn't have, like, you know, there really wasn't a great story heading into WrestleMania between Rollins and Lesnar, but Rollins did win the title. And Rollins didn't exactly, you know, once again, Rollins got saddled with Baron Corbin, and then they decided that they were going to really play up the real life relationship. I guess I'm repeating myself now. and now we're back to where we were, you know, 6 months ago. You know, Lesnar's the champion, cashing money in the bank, Seth's chasing again. It's like, so Seth's already beaten Brock.
it in a lot of ways it had me thinking about you know, his Shield brethren Roman Reigns. Like, Roman Reigns, he kind of looked like he was going to have a win at him, then he has it snatched away from him, and then he just could never win. Like, and I don't, you know, he couldn't win against Brock again, and it just really ended up hurting him, and it took him, honestly, getting leukemia, or having a recurrence of leukemia is probably the better way to put it, or the proper way, I should say. But, you know, I feel like they're not going to have Lesnar lose the championship again. You know, anytime soon, especially at SummerSlam.
I don't feel like, yeah, you're right. And, you know, especially, as you said, as you were going to say, not to Seth again. I mean, then you're going back to Seth, you know, struggling to find opponents, but then, you know, Brock not around. It's a bit of a mess, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure what the answer is, because I don't know who the guy is. If it's not Roman, if it's not Seth.
Yeah, that's why, honestly, like, it was one of those...
Maybe I would have... Go ahead.
It's one of those things where the WWE actually had a good idea in trying to keep rematches from happening. But then they've just kind of pooped on their own parade by just doing it.
Yeah.
You know, like, because I was like, oh man, there are a lot of good possibilities in this ring. And you can always have some weird finish. Like, I don't know why I would have been more fine with a Randy Orton, Brock Lesnar feud. Like, I guess at least I feel like it's kind of been a while since that happened.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, you could have tried to read Braun Strowman. You know, there the Barrages in there. Once again, if they were going to run with Seth again, you know, they really just should have announced the match and started, you know, started the promos, and they're going to need to do some stuff here, because I you know, I guess we could use this to transition to maybe finishing us off today without talking about that four-way women's debacle. I think we can't get out of here without talking about it.
Oh, the elimination match on Raw?
Oh yeah.
I will say this to start off positive. I would much prefer elimination style matches to get to the commercial break as opposed to best 2 out of 3 falls matches.
Oh. Yeah, I guess I agree, but I feel like this match started off on the wrong foot because, you know, once again, it's SummerSlam coming up. It's supposed to be the second biggest show of the year. I think a lot of people were expecting that Becky was going to have, you know, Ronda Rousey was going to come back, Sasha Banks was going to come back, and then, you know, the announcing this four-way in advance was a red herring. But no, then the bell rang, and the match started. And the match, you know, it wasn't good. It was sloppy. They seemed to lose their way. Particularly Alexa Bliss, you know, had a really bad night. There's not much more. I mean, we're almost 20 minutes into the match, and she's going for chin locks, like she either needed to legitimately catch her breath or she just didn't know what to do next.
Especially after, because that was really weird because she had a chin lock in, and I forget who got out of it. But then she put her right back in it without really. You know, normally there's a few moves in there, even with Randy Orton. You know, he kind of strings together a few more moves.
Yeah.
And then he reapplies the chin lock. Like, this was like maybe a kick to the back and then back to the chin lock. And I'm just like, ooh, man, that seems really weird.
Yeah, and the crowd let him have it. I mean, some of it was disrespectful, but yeah, no. The match was not good. It went way too long. And then in the end, I guess of those four, Natalia's the best option. I've said it many times over the years. Not a big fan. But once again, if Ronda's not coming back, if Sasha's not coming back, I guess the show's in Canada. You might as well run with Natty because they're throughout company history they've always had top Canadian stars, and this day and age that coverage's pretty barren, actually.
It is.
They're in Toronto, so you never know exactly how Torontoans will respond to the French Canadians like Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn either. Historically.
Well, and yeah, I guess the Hearts have historically gotten a good reaction, but that was one of the few good things I felt like came out of that match was I don't know why the WWE is forcing their baby faces to kind of be the... Well, I guess I understand why they're forcing them to be the aggressors. Is because the crowd seems to be reacting positively to aggressors in general. You know, Becky snaps, everyone cheers for her. Charlotte snaps, everyone cheers for her. And I guess... It kind of makes for these interesting situations where Becky's got to be kind of bitchy to Natalia right off the jump. And, you know, bringing out heel tendencies for Natalia to me is always going to be a positive thing because Though I feel like she's rehabbed her image for me a little bit since the early days of Total Divas. She still doesn't come off as terribly likable.
No, no, she comes off, you know, very corny, very... Honestly, I see her as being someone who I would consider, like, she seems fake nice. You know, she seems like she's the type of person who, you know, she's always nice to everyone's face, but then, you know, the knife will go in behind their back, or that, you know, in the end of the day, it's always about her. So, yeah, I've never been a big fan of Natalya. I don't, you know. And the thing is, I feel like they thought that she was being portrayed really well on Total Divas, and I never saw it that way.
Oh, yeah, if they thought that, I do not want to have what they're drinking and or smoking.
No.
I'll take a hard pass.
No, because... so I'm not really a fan of Natalya, you know. I find her much more tolerable as a heel. Hopefully we'll see that you know that side of her more come out, because obviously Becky. Well, I guess in Toronto, maybe for that one night. Who knows how the crowd will react? But overall, yeah, it's the match that they're going with. You know, I guess it's the best option.
Well, yeah, and you kind of pointed it out, and it's something that, I don't know, needs a lot of talking, but whatever happened, did Bliss have a concussion that kept her out?
This last time, she had a really bad sinus infection that took her, like, 2 weeks to get over, I think.
Oh.
So maybe that's part of the problem in the four-way. She was, you know, legitimately out of breath, who knows, possibly.
Yeah, she just seems to be, it just seems like things haven't been as smooth since...
I feel horrible for her.
Yeah, things have not been as smooth for her in the ring in general, I don't feel like, since the concussion.
No.
You know, if the sinus infection was the latest in a long line of problem that she's had, yeah, I guess I can understand why she was getting blown up a little bit. You know, just her quality of work was always pretty good, at least. Like, I'm not sure that I ever considered her the best in-ring technician or anything like that, but she always seemed to have good matches at a minimum.
Yeah.
And, you know, something is not clicking right currently.
Yeah, no. Something is... Yeah, something's not clicking right with her. In general, I think they've put... WrestleMania... Maybe over the last few years, it's... You know, since the Women's Revolution started, you know, the NXT Horsewomen have been, you know, a cut above, or, you know, everyone else. And, you know, and then WrestleMania season this year put Becky and Charlotte way above everyone else. And then, of course, Sasha just disappeared. And they're reestablishing Bayley. But it feels like no one else is all that over. In the entire WWE women's division.
I mean, Bliss was doing well until when she lost the belts. Things have just not gone well since then.
Right. No.
Just and I mean, even outside the injuries, like they don't. Because even with Charlotte, like. This week, I was like, oh, man, it feels kind of nice that she has been off TV for like a month. I mean, she's been posting pictures left and right on Twitter.
Oh, boy, her and Andrade seem like they're having a real good time together. Damn. Need a shower after I see some of those pictures. but then it was weird because then Bailey just... hands Ember Moon the SummerSlam title shot. Although I'm not 100% sure if, you know, either A, that match is going to stay one-on-one, or if Charlotte Flair doesn't boot out, you know, Ember Moon from the spot entirely. I just don't see them not having Charlotte Flair on SummerSlam.
Yeah,
she's been gone for pretty much the last 2 months.
Yeah, it was for the best that she got a little time to breathe. And
I do agree with that.
And Bayley could really use, honestly, well, anyone in that division can use a win over Charlotte to kind of help solidify, you know, their character. Because, I guess I think that Bayley needs one more win to really kind of lock things down for, you know, her being transformed, I guess.
I agree with that. Because obviously it was a Money in the Bank cash and how she beat Charlotte. Her beating Charlotte clean in the middle in a major match. Yeah, that would definitely help run a lot. I mean, as of right now, the match is Ember Moon. That should be fine. But once again, they haven't done a lot of character work with or promo work with Ember Moon either.
No.
Unless girl who reads comic books and plays video games is her character.
But you don't even know that from TV.
Yes, you do.
Oh, she said that?
No, because when she was being harassed by Mandy and Sonya, she was either reading a comic book or playing her on a Nintendo Switch. They broke her Nintendo Switch, Kevin. I don't know how you didn't remember that.
Probably because we were recording when that segment happened before.
At least one of them. So who knows?
Oh, well, I did erase one SmackDown. Oh, see, this is what happens when you miss one SmackDown and record during another. Because I do think that I missed at least one of those segments. But, I guess, whatever. You're right then. That isn't a character. And they definitely need more than that. And they need more than her. And they just need more character. For a company that claims to be character-based, we have allotted a lot of time over the years to how they do not develop characters.
Right.
Oh, man. Well, one of my characteristics is to talk about a beer that I may consume during said show. I think I might have talked about this one recently, but here goes again. Dayton Beer Company, Oregon Alley IPA. It's an Imperial IPA. It's solid. My father-in-law got this for me, thinking that I would love it. It is it's pretty decent, but it's not crazy awesome. 8%, 99 IBUs, so it's as high as it gets in the IBU department. And it does kind of, it's a little too piney for me, which is why it's not maybe better liked for me. So I will leave it at that. Brand, at Stunt Granny. I'm at Frango11. He's at Chris Calamita. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you happen to listen to us, and have a good night.
Later.